We welcome back to the show Governor Ned Lamont. And Governor Lamont, it has been a busy few, I don't know, months since I last spoke to you. I'm a little mad at you, to be honest. Welcome back. How
are
you?
That's a great way to start the interview, Melissa. Nice to talk to you.
I'm mad because I feel like you are always talking to Mike Cerulli, although I know he's always bugging you. He's always coming up and visiting you. But you went on Lisa Wexler's show before you even came on my show after you announced you're running again. How dare you? I thought we were friends. What happened?
You got to ask. We're right here. Cerulli's always in your face.
Cerulli's always in your face, right? I mean, no, I do love Mike Cerulli, so I can't knock him. But it's great to talk to you. I mean, what an announcement, though. Wow. So we're going for number three.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Melissa. Thank you. Susan and I are running for re-election. I think we've come a long way in the last 8 years. Think about it, when people were leaving the state and everybody was raising taxes and GE had left and people were depressed. And I think we're in a much better place. But right now, we got to do a better job. And when it comes to affordability, that's everything from health care costs to electric prices and housing. And that's our strategy.
So, Governor Lamont, as you know, you have a Democratic challenger, at least to push a primary at this point, State Representative Josh Elliott, and he's very focused on taxes, and he feels you are not doing your part in making more of a, I'd say, being more equitable in that. What is your response to, you know, his claims?
He feels pretty strongly we ought to raise taxes, especially on rich people. Same thing that John Rowland did. He raised it to 5%. Jody Rell raised it up to 6.5%. And poor Dan Malloy raised it a little bit as well. It doesn't solve. I think people really like the fact that we've been consistent. We've held the line on taxes. But I have made the tax code a lot more progressive, Melissa. But the way I've done that is by reducing the income tax for middle-class folks, not millionaires, but middle-class folks, and really eliminating the income tax for working families. So we've made the tax code more progressive. And more importantly, we've got the resources we need to make the key investments to keep our state going forward, everything from education to municipal aid.
Let's talk about one thing you had just mentioned, which is housing. You passed, or I should say you signed into law, a new housing bill. And you and I haven't been able to talk about it, but what do you think about the legislation? I know there are people who feel it's an improvement from the original bill that you had vetoed. And quite frankly, Governor Lamont, I think you took a lot of heat from your own party when you did veto the bill. How are you feeling this go around with this new legislation?
I can tell you that I was very active in getting this housing bill passed. We have a real crying need for housing. Young families, working households, that's what we needed to do. To me, it was very important that I get mayors and first selectmen on board. Mayors and first selectmen, Democrats and Republicans alike, were not supportive of the last bill. They thought it was too heavy-handed and top-down. I worked very closely with them. Look, the legislature is a little more partisan. I couldn't get any Republican legislators on board. But I got the mayors and first selectmen, Republicans and Democrats alike, and do what we can to make sure the towns take the lead and tell us where they want that housing to go. And we'll be there as your partner.
So it's interesting because I've been trying to talk to the same people you have been talking to, Governor Lamont, in this whole process, including Joe DeLong from CCM. Great guy. And I think has great perspective, you know, getting voices from every single municipality, like what you're talking about. And so I had Joe on recently and I had asked him, what do you think about the new bill? And he's like, yeah, you know, it's better than the last one and I feel good about it. However, you could hear a hesitancy in his voice. And so I kind of pressed into that a little bit. And he said, ultimately, he's like, we have an affordability crisis. He said, you know, everybody can argue that we have a housing crisis here, but really it starts with if we addressed our affordability crisis, we wouldn't have as big of a housing crisis. And I didn't know what you thought about that.
If we address our housing crisis, you wouldn't have as much of an affordability crisis. Look, we got people starting out, they're paying 40, 50% of their income just to get started. We just don't have enough multifamily housing in our downtown areas and near trains. We're converting old parking lots to housing as well. Old mills that are sitting empty, we're bringing them back to life. So if you care about affordability, you've got to have a housing agenda, and our housing agenda is led by the mayors and first selectmen.
Yeah, but I do think in some places we are building, you know, like I feel like we're building like crazy in certain towns and cities, but the units overall are not affordable. So like Connecticut residents are not affording it on average, you know, so even if we build it, they will come. They're not coming because it's, you know, maybe we're attracting people from New York or other states where they are bringing in money, which I guess is good, but we're not really helping our own. You know, I don't see where when we are building in places like Fairfield or, you know, even cities like Bridgeport, where we're actually making it where the average Connecticut resident can afford to live there.
I think we're making progress. We're building more affordable units than ever before, more workforce housing, more smaller units, studios that are one bedrooms for folks that are single, a lot more people living alone than 50 years ago. But more broadly, the more housing you build, the more supply there is, it makes it a more competitive market. And make sure those landlords can't jack up rent because people have alternatives.
Why not really focus on 830G? I mean, I think that always is fascinating to me because both sides of the aisle in some regard have admitted it's a little archaic or it's broken. It may not be working as effectively as it used to when it was first enacted. But consistently, I don't see where 830G is being touched at all. Granted, that's probably more work, obviously. But to me, why not fix 830G?
I think we've made real progress on it in this bill. I was pushing for this. I said, your town, tell us where you want the housing to go. Show us you made a good faith effort with your plans, reflecting zoning, and we're going to give you relief on 830G. So you don't necessarily just have to add the units, but you have to show where those units are going to go and how it can be built. So, look, 90% of what we're trying to do is incentives, as you know. The small towns, Melissa, my God, I can't build housing. I don't have sewer and water. Tell us where you want that housing to go. We'll get you sewer and water. Governor, I really want a train station here in the Naugatuck Valley. Let's get some housing around that train station so we know more people are using the train and you'll have that station. We're building four stations on the Naugatuck Valley. It's incredible. Doubled up the number of trains. Everybody back and forth. Big housing renaissance there.
Do you think that this housing legislation is going to be looked at and either expanded or is anything going to happen with it during the legislative session? Because I keep hearing from essentially everybody that this was a really great foundation. This is a really great step in the right direction, but we have to keep building on it. Do you think that will happen in the upcoming session?
I'm in no rush. Look, we worked really hard. It's a big bill. It's an important bill. Let's digest it. Let's let mayors and first selectmen a chance to put in place their plans. I think they have a year and a half to get that done. We don't need every day to have a new piece of legislation. I think we're making progress. Although there is one piece I would like to do when it comes to rents. Hmm. We have big out-of-state private equity firms buying up a lot of multifamily rentals in our cities. And I think that's okay, but I don't want you jacking up the rent to pay for the fact you overbid on these things. So I want to see if we can cap those increases for a period of time. That's a bill I'd like to see passed in this session. Help our renters.
We're chatting with Governor Ned Lamont, and we are going to continue on because I know we could talk about housing all day, but I have a lot of other topics to get to. So, Governor Lamont, Eversource, did you see one of their top executives, I actually had them on my show recently, is calling for the removal of the public benefits off of electricity bills and to move it to the general fund. What do you think about that?
You're just rearranging the deck chairs. You know what's in the public benefits charge? Nuclear power, energy efficiency, ways that we can bring down the price of electricity. So if you say, I don't want the ratepayers to pay for it, I want the taxpayers to pay for it, you know, you can do that, but you're not really making a difference. The way you make a difference is bring down demand. We're doing that with energy efficiency and more generation. We're doing that with wind. We're doing that with solar. We're doing that with nuclear. Doing everything I can to bring down the price of electricity for you. We've had the highest damn electric prices in the country for 50 years, and everybody's sort of playing games with things like public benefits charge. Let's get more generation in the state.
I think it's kind of shocking, though, to see Eversource, not UI yet, but maybe they are, to speak up about that. I thought was pretty alarming. I actually said to the guy, well, if you're upset about it, like, where were you? Because this has been something that's been pushed for years to get rid of the public benefits. But you're still thinking like, OK, we're just moving something from one place to another. It's not a priority.
I am. Look,
yeah.
No offense, but Eversource wants to say high price of electricity is not our fault. It's the fault of the public benefits charge. We have an old grid. They have to invest in it. Their costs are very high, and that's a big piece of our bill. We have Pura. We keep a close eye on them, and we work with Eversource collaboratively as well.
It's funny you bring up Pura because Marissa Gillette is still relevant, it seems like, 2 months after she stepped down. And my I'm hearing, I have sources telling me that she's still in touch with Pura in some regard, which is a little concerning. I don't know if that's true or not.
I doubt it. I mean, we brought in five new players or four and a half since Dave Arcani's been there for a year or so, give a fresh start to Pura. But I got to tell you, Pura's job is going to be naturally back and forth with utilities because they regulate the utilities. They hold the utilities accountable. So it's not surprising utilities are not that happy with Pura all the time.
And they haven't been, sure. But do you feel like we're still focused on a narrative that involves somebody who's not even on Pura anymore? And if so, you know, should we shut that down? Because I feel like she's still relevant. And I don't really know why. As just, you know, somebody living in the state as a taxpayer, I'm not obviously on Pura, but I think it's interesting that she's still relevant and yet she's been gone for 2 months.
Yeah, I would urge the utilities to get over it. We have a fresh start at Pura with, five new commissioners. Get going there. Stop suing the old commissioners. Let's get going with a fresh start.
So as far as your understanding, she's not working with Pura at all?
I don't think so, no. We have Tom has taken over there. He was in the Consumer Counsel's office. He's reached out to including making sure the new commissioners are very involved. And he's reached out to utilities. It's a real fresh start, which I think is important.
So another thing I want to talk about, we have Governor Ned Lamont here. I've been seeing more and more reports about sham marriages. Now, I don't know who I need to talk to about this, Governor Lamont, but it's a real problem. I'm sure you've seen it in the news.
Look, I've seen that in the news. Sometimes I hope that the cure is not worse than the disease. Some state bureaucrat determining what's a sham marriage and what's a real marriage. I get a little nervous about that. But look, when their kids are involved, somebody under the age of 16, we step in and we got to be very clear about that because there could be some abuses there.
Yeah, I mean, I know, obviously, we're very focused on what had gone on in and probably is still in some capacity going on in Bridgeport. I mean, at the hands of, you know, somebody in particular who's being looked at for absentee ballot fraud and conducting hundreds of sham marriages. And honestly, I've been kind of looking for, well, who's the person to stop that or who's the person to regulate that better? Is there somebody in Connecticut that would have more of an oversight into this? Or does this just go to the attorney general?
It probably goes to the attorney general, but if there's one or two people who are officiating in all these marriages that some seem suspicious, I'd be pretty tough on that person. I wouldn't necessarily go after the couples.
No, I don't think you go after the couples always. But I mean, it's interesting because the person you're talking about, I know, is being scrutinized, like I said, for absentee ballot related crimes, but also happens to be the same person who is one of the more notable justices of the peace, regularly operating sham marriages, and not just in Bridgeport. My understanding is she does it in New Haven as well.
Maybe that's somebody we ought to look at, but to be blunt, Melissa, of the 50 most important topics on my agenda, I'm not sure that's in the top 49.
Okay. I guess I'll ask the attorney general. That's fine. I could certainly go that direction.
So if there's somebody you really think is helping to facilitate a fraudulent marriage, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I think she's doing it a lot. It seems like she's doing it a lot. Another thing I wanted to just ask you about really quickly, Governor Lamont, and I appreciate your time, is there was a new report that just came out actually this week about audit findings on Connecticut's DEEP, Department of Energy and I always get this wrong, environmental protection. Could you comment on that at all?
First of all, we have really good auditors that hold people accountable. And we don't interfere in any way. They go after everybody's expense accounts and make sure that meal has a receipt attached to it. They go after mileage and make sure that you can account for that state car, what you are doing. And they catch some things. Usually they're errors. Nothing fraudulent going on, but they want to hold people accountable. And so if it's DEEP or whatever other department, we say take a look at this. You're a little shaky in terms of the paperwork you needed to back up that expense account. We're not going to let it happen again.
Do you feel like it's just because we're seeing a real influx? And we actually had somebody on with the state agency talking about FOI requests and the fact that they are through the roof in the last maybe year or two. Do you feel like it's just because we're having more audits done that we're seeing more and more departments have pretty similar outcomes where it's like, hey, you know, lack of documentation or, hey, you know, you're overusing your mileage. Do you feel like it's just because we have such a focus on FOI requests right now in the state of Connecticut? Or do you think that they're, you know, it's just sort of coincidental that we've got systematic, it seems like, issues at a lot of our state agencies with this?
Well, Melissa, I'll tell you that when it comes to audits on things like expense accounts and paperwork, it shows you how minute we get in holding people accountable. But I also I worry about all these not-for-profits that are out there, some of which we're having a hard time holding accountable. And there, I think we're working with auditors, working with our own bills to make sure that we have a really clear idea what these not-for-profits are doing. Let's see what their financials are looking at. Let's see what they're doing. Make sure they're not just a pass-through to some other entity. Those are the type of issues that I'm more worried about when it comes to the taxpayers' dollars.
And last thing, Governor Lamont, because I know you're going to be talking more about this later today, you are implementing a new policy to make it easier for licensed nurses from other jurisdictions to practice in Connecticut. Obviously, we have a nursing healthcare worker shortage in our country, including here in Connecticut. Can you give us any insight into this before your press conference today?
I will. We need nurses. Coming out of COVID, you realize how important nurses are to the function of our hospitals and broadly healthcare. They're the people they take care of, and we have a shortage. So I think it was incredibly short-sighted of the Trump administration to say, we're going to cut the scholarship support for nurses. We are doing just the opposite in this state. We're making it less expensive, waiving the certification fees. And I'm talking to my team because we have $500 million set aside just because of these Trump cuts. Maybe there's a way that we can reinforce those scholarships, make sure our nurses can graduate.
And I know, Governor Lamont, you were touting new reports showing that we're doing well in paying down our pensions, you know, which is great. Do you think in the upcoming session, I'd imagine that the fiscal guardrails will be talked about again, but do you still feel like we should hold our fiscal guardrails where they're at?
Well, look, we are doing much better. We've had 7 balanced budgets in a row. Our unfunded pensions, remember that was driving everybody crazy, went from 30% funded to 60% funded. But this is no time for us to wander. Right now we're in the election year and the legislative season, so everybody has 5 different ways to spend the surplus and bend the guardrails. I'm going to be very careful about that because that's just the type of attitude that got us into this pickle 10, 20, 30 years ago. Don't want that to happen again.
Okay, so no moving the fiscal guardrails.
You know, we've done well. We did our early childhood. I was outside of the guardrails, and that's $300 million, hopefully a year, to do some big important things. But basically, I want to continue to pay down the debt. We still have more debt per capita than just about any state in the country. We're just beginning to dig out for the first time ever.
Governor Lamont, I really appreciate you giving us the time talking about as much as we could on our list today. Thank you so much, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Invite me more often. I miss you, Melissa.
Thank you, Governor Lamont. I appreciate it. And yes, we will talk again very soon. Appreciate your time.